Well, I didn't have this on my old bingo card, Bob. Paul not here today, but I'm with Bob Pompiani and with my friend City Limits. And if you would have asked me an hour ago, could a story regarding Heather Like supersede Steeler talk at the start of this show today, I would have said you were crazy. But this is the way it has to be. This is going to be almost an all Steelers reaction show. But we have to lead with the fact that Heather Like has been relieved of her duties at Pitt. Chris Carter of the Post-Gazette with the story. Pitt has since confirmed. Heather was there. She replaced Scott Barnes in March of 2017. And Bob, she's done. You have a new chancellor in Joan Gable who released a statement saying, "Today I informed the University of Pittsburgh Director of Athletics Heather Like that I was making a change. Upon her arrival, Heather guided our program through a unique period in college athletics. We thank her for her leadership. Her tenure included successes from football's first ACC championship to volleyball, reaching its first Final Four while representing the university at the conference and national levels." But Gable finishes by saying, "However, as we enter a new era in college athletics, one that seems to change by the day, we need a new vision and a new leader of our athletics department." So mincing no words there. And man, do things change fast, Bob. It was almost exactly a year ago today that Joan Gable came on as Pitt Chancellor and said this: "Heather is without question one of the best athletic directors in the country." So here we are a year later. Your reaction and thoughts as to why this happened?
Well, my thoughts would be anytime something like this happens, number one, you have to look back at some of the stuff that's happened most recently. One of them is the fact that, you know, she's been rumored to be dealing with other universities. Again, it's speculation, so I don't know.
No, not just rumored. She has interviewed, and I was told by a couple of people today, multiple times in the last couple of years. I haven't confirmed this. One person said four times.
Well, so, that's a lot. I didn't hear about four times. I heard about the Northwestern opportunity that they filled. As soon as they filled it, I wondered what was going to happen, never thinking this would be the outcome.
At some point, it's the old, if you don't want to be here, if you're looking to move up, then move out.
Or you play a dangerous game of I'll dangle my name out with different universities, seeing that I can get an upgrade in my pay. Because I think her contract was about to run out.
It was.
So that's one of the issues. The other thing that I think is interesting is fundraising has changed. And again, this is pure speculation on my part. I don't know any of this other than to know that fundraising has changed significantly and you need to go deeper and get more. It's the biggest thing an athletic director can do. You have to have this ability to get to people, present a vision of what you want. You're a former Pitt graduate, whatever, come over here, we're going to do this, you'll be part of it, and get them to donate money. Not easy to do. There are some wealthy donors, but you also have this new facet of NIL money. NIL money is difficult.
Yes.
For any university, but especially one that has not a big footprint in football like Pitt does. You know, that's the truth. It's bigger when you go to Ohio State. All the blue bloods, they have people who are willing and able to do it. There's not all of that available here. So I'm just putting that all together and coming up with when she says we need a new vision, I would imagine that's the vision. How do you fundraise? How do you get this NIL train in motion?
Yeah, the new vision has a two-word equivalent: more money. There are people over there who will tell you, I'm not saying that this is necessarily hard and fast fact. I'm saying it's not hard to find people who will tell you that Heather was overextended financially on this Victory Heights project, Bob. And if you look at Chris Carter's story today, he said that as of April of 23, Like said Pitt had raised around $12 million of the $240 million she said was necessary to complete the project. We're all veterans of projects like these, too. The cost only goes up as time goes on, and 12 out of 240 isn't a lot, and I do wonder. It's also not hard to find people who will tell you that with the NIL, she wasn't exactly, you know, a wizard when it came to raising money and sort of directing a new world athletics program. I mean, the new chancellor all but said that. with that statement, right? And then the way that I measure, finally, me, you know, away from the finances and NIL and Victory Heights and all of that, I look at the two flagship programs, men's basketball and football. And while there have been some successes, football has backslid under Pat Narduzzi. It reached its height 2 years ago, and that seems like more of an aberration than a pattern. And Jeff Capel, while he has had a couple of good years here, has one NCAA tournament appearance in 6 years. So it's not like the two flagship programs are flourishing like never before. They've had their moments, but that probably factors into it too. For those who think Pitt can do better, especially it feels like now, right at this second, on the football side. So all of that is the best I can come up with right now. We're going to talk, hopefully, to Chris Peak a little while. 11 o'clock limits?
Yeah, he can come on at 11:05.
And that's where we are.
And I think the role of the athletic director has certainly changed. And that's the thing you're talking about here. When she says new vision, using those terms, that means... you know, athletic directorship has changed. The responsibilities have changed. It's not just coming in and picking the right coach to run your program and worrying about it, nothing else. You know, I think maybe she saw the writing on the wall, too. I think, you know, by interviewing at Northwestern or Michigan or anywhere else she might have been interviewing, that says to the people in charge here that you're not committed or you can't get this job done or I'm going to get out before it, you know, gets to the point where it affects me personally in terms of my future with this university. So all of that added up, I guess, to this moment. And the question will be now is, what role does this new AD have? More of a general manager's role, more of, you know, whatever the role is.
A lot of colleges hiring actual general managers.
Yeah, you got it. Business is important. You got to figure out how to figure out a business plan to move forward with this whole university. And it's deeper than ever before. And again, the NIL money, since it is... you know, off the rails in terms of how much you can give. There's no limit. You got to find the right people. Every year, it's a new challenge to keep your players. For example, if Eli Holst, you know, people say, hey, he's a redshirt freshman. Man, that's good for Pitt. Is it? Maybe not. If he has a good year, he could just say, I want more money and leave.
You have to master that side of it in this world and be an expert salesperson.
Right.
And I'm not sure that she was. Having said all that, she did nothing but represent that university with class, and some very good things happened under her tenure as well. Whether or not she hired Dan Fisher as a volleyball coach, you know, it's important to extend people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make them want to stay, not have that as a stepping stone job. He stayed and they win. All they do is win, and that's become a fairly high-profile sport as women's volleyball. The men's basketball team has started to rebound a little bit, no pun intended, and the football team did win their only outright conference title ever with Heather Like at the command.
Right, there are a lot of great things that she's accomplished.
Yeah,
in
some
that role.
Really good things happen with Heather Like there, but I can see, and I think most Pitt fans would probably say that. You can have your voice heard at 412-928-9370 that they can do better and that the other things that we're talking about, well, forget about us talking about, that the new chancellor talked about, are just really, really important this day and age. And again, the statement from Joan Gable, the chancellor, as we enter a new era in college athletics, one that seems to change by the day, we need a new vision and a new leader of our athletics department. It can't get more straightforward
and
than that.
Listen, change every day is accurate. I mean, there are things that happen that you don't expect. And here's another one. Conference expansion and redirection. As an athletic director, you better be ahead of the game when it comes to, because this, it seems like every year we're talking about teams moving around the country. And you want to be involved in one of those major conferences.
Man,
you
that's know,
I
the other thing.
I can see where they can be left out if they're not proactive about this and
of
end
course.
Up in some sort of lesser conference. You do not want that to happen because it affects everything else that you do. So all of this meshed together, I think it's the job of more than one person, to be honest. I think you better have a general manager on top and people behind, you know, underneath to figure out different compartmentalizing aspects of what you need to do, because it's a different job than it ever was before.
I mean, that's
who would be
thing.
On the list? Now, that's another thing. How do they?
Well,
they're going to go all over the country, I would imagine, to find people who are in successful programs.
You start with men's football, or football. I was going to say men's basketball. Football is the flagship program pretty much everywhere, and you better get that right. And you're correct, Bob. Things change fast on that conference landscape, and there's a lot of people who cover this sport, people who I respect a lot, from the Stuart Mandels to the Pat Fortes and people like that, who truly believe, and I'm not saying those two necessarily, but people like them truly believe we're going to see one or two super conferences with who knows how many teams. 40? To me, that puts Pitt right on the bubble.
That's what I mean. You don't want to be on
and
the other side of that.
Yeah, you better survive that. You better. You better be well positioned to survive that. So, major change with Pitt. 412-928-9370. We'll come back to that periodically. Certainly, we'll take your calls if you have an opinion on this. Listen, in our business, when you're thinking about, you know, what are we going to talk about today? What are we going to do? Usually this is an easy day. It's all Steelers all the time. But when this happened, I mean, it's Pitt's athletic director right before we came on the air. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It
was just like last week.
It's a gigantic story.
What was the Pirates story that kind of superseded everything last week?
The no-hitter.
Yeah. The fact that they struck out like 17 times and it was just an awful
night. And Sheltie snapped on the Noah Constrictor.
Right. That became a big item right off the bat again.
All right. So we'll move back and forth. We'll toggle a little bit. But this is a Steeler Monday, Bob, off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. And I want to start with this because it almost feels like this has been low key. It's been strange. It's been a very weird and some would say non-existent quarterback controversy. But let's be honest now, we have one. Because how I define it is there a large section of the fan base who wants one guy over the other? And I think there might be at this point. Are there viable choices to be had? I think there might be. At this point, I think Russell Wilson, I believe the reports from the likes of Adam Schefter that he pushed to play. Because if I'm Russell Wilson and Justin Fields goes out yesterday and if he throws for, you know, 250 and three touchdowns and runs for 100 and they score 40 points, I may never start another game in the NFL. So, yeah, I'm pushing if I'm Russell Wilson to start. Now, Justin Fields didn't do that, but the question now becomes, who should and who will start for the Russell Wilson Bowl in Denver? Thoughts?
My thoughts are it's going to be Russell Wilson. Mike Tomlin labeled him as QB1 because he likes the experience factor. He also likes the fact that he is more protective of the football generally than Fields. And I think we saw evidence yesterday, Joe, that was right off the bat a problem potentially. First snap of the game, if that's recovered by Atlanta and they somehow turn a short field into a touchdown – major problem. Later in the game, he was sacked, and the ball almost came out. He should have not taken that sack. My point is, I think the foundation of what they did yesterday, albeit something that you cannot sustain over the course of 17 games and beat the elite offenses in the league, that's kind of the blueprint with which they operate. Rely on your defense. Don't make mistakes. Win the turnover battle, even if it's a one-score, low-score game. We got Boswell. That's a, you know, and I think what happens is, that's what they wanted to do yesterday. They wanted to play it close to the vest. We've seen this show before.
Should start, Bob?
Russell Wilson. I'll go with Russell Wilson. I was trying to, you know, think about why Justin Fields would be a good. And listen, he did a good job yesterday managing the game, which is something that normally in Chicago you didn't say those two things together because Fields didn't manage games very well. He made mistakes that cost them games, which is why his starting record was 10-28. Not all his fault. But in this case, I think also the momentum and the motivation Russell Wilson would have going back to Denver is significant. And I think players around him will rise to that occasion. Denver's not a very good football team right now. They have a rookie quarterback. You go in there and play mistake-free football, you have a very good chance of starting 2-0. And I think that's what they look at and see in Russell Wilson, and I would concur with that for now. Now, if he goes out and plays badly, then I think everything opens up again.
I'm a Russell Wilson guy. When Peter King came on this show last year and kept linking him to the Steelers, everybody thought Peter was crazy. He was right. I said the Steelers should get him. They got him. He hasn't even had a chance yet. Listen, if Justin Fields goes out yesterday and absolutely tears it up, I'm willing to change my mind. But there's just no way, even though I thought Fields made some winning plays at the end. Didn't Kenny Pickett used to make some of those, Bob?
Yes.
Made some winning plays at the end. It's Russell Wilson's job. And if he's cleared, there, Fields did not do enough to elevate himself.
They didn't score an offensive touchdown,
To the number one spot. He just didn't. 412-928-9370, 928-9370. Having said that, I hear what Crowley was talking about on the morning show when he said, listen, the guy walked into a very difficult situation. He didn't even get all the reps during the week. The game plan was not tailored for Justin Fields. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see a game plan that was completely tailored to his skill set. But in the meantime, I want to see a game plan completely tailored for Russell Wilson and watch him play. It's his job.
Right. And he was the man they chose, and I don't think they're going to deviate from that. Now, if this was a...
Well, what if he's not healthy? If yesterday was a playoff game, does he play? Because it sounds like they're being way overprotective here early in the season with one of these weird calf injuries. But I got to believe if that was a playoff game, he would have gone.
Yeah.
Especially if he was having a great year.
I agree.
Right?
I mean, he was out there throwing the ball around. It was interesting there were no medical people around him. So that kind of was an indication. If there were, then you'd think, okay, they're testing him. They must have made a conclusion before he ever threw the ball. So he's out there throwing the ball. Hey, listen, that calf injury is a tough injury. Joe Burrow found out a lot of quarterbacks who haven't. It's like a groin or a hamstring. It can linger, pop up at any time.
Yeah.
He's going to have to deal with this probably all season long. But if he's healthy, what determines health? 95%, 90%, whatever he is, I think he's going to be cleared to play. And if he is, he should start.
I thought Fields did some good things. I did, but it was disconcerting. And I don't know exactly whose fault it was. I really haven't seen quotes from either guy. Maybe you have, Bob, on the fumbled exchange. That really happened right away in the game after what happened in the preseason. Fields almost fumbled at a critical time late in the game, and then he engineered a really nice drive, a long drive. And I thought things just went helter-skelter on that fourth and one. That was just crazy. Greg Olsen said it on the broadcast. Everybody's looking at Fields like, what are we doing here? I thought they put him in a bad position there. By basically trying to hurry up and fool people.
With a stacked offense. Everybody's
what are you
tight
doing?
Together.
What are we doing
well,
here? So that drive did not end well. And then you give the ball back and a touchdown beats you. Tomlin should have kicked the field goal there, in my opinion. But that's beside the point to how Fields played. He did some good things. But, man, I felt like at certain times there could have been something catastrophic happen.
Right. That's what I said at the beginning. That's the downside for him. But I will tell you, on third down, their success rate was 47%.
He was good on
those. On the other hand, Denver went 0-for-5 on third down in the second half. When you win that battle, and largely it's because of his ability to run. He made some significant plays, 50-some yards rushing, but breaking down over the course of those third downs, there were three of them that resulted in first down. So he used his legs to his advantage, that occupied time of possession, which is why I thought they did a good job winning the line of scrimmage in the second half. Bottom line is, you go back to that fourth and one, it should never have happened anyway. Two receivers failed to block on a third down play before that. They had an easy first down set up, first and goal. That didn't happen.
I mean, the difference with him is obviously the legs, right, from Kent. But it was.
And I think that helps a young offensive line,
it does.
Too.
It's a big difference. But that's kind of a Kenny Pickett game from yesterday. Pickett, at his best, in quotes, was a guy who didn't turn the ball over, gave you a chance to win at the end, and often made some plays at the end, right? And
yes.
They won more than they lost with Pickett. But yes, the difference with Fields is that he can take off, and that is a big difference. I will acknowledge that. However, I can't ignore the fact that they didn't score a touchdown. a touchdown. And Bob, I've seen this movie before. That was one of the most predictable games I've ever picked on this station. I picked it to be 19-13. It was 18-10. It was going to be a game where Kirk Cousins, you know, basically straight out of bed after a year, was not going to get anything done. The Steelers' defense at this point in the season is obviously fresh and healthy. And when they're that way, they're not good. They're great. Unfortunately, we're going to be sitting here in November and December and they're not going to be fresh or healthy anymore. That's the problem. And every year we have seen that if you don't have an offense that can win you games with points, you're going to be in trouble. So this is great for today. This was necessary. They went in and won how they had to win. But I saw this defense in Cincinnati or in Buffalo 3 years ago wreck Josh Allen in spite of Mitch Trubisky, right? In spite of him. And then bad offense undid that season early. I saw this same defense go in and ruin Joe Burrow and the Bengals. You remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How about five interceptions or whatever they had that day?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one in Buffalo was with aging Ben. The one in Cincinnati was with Trubisky and the offense was terrible. Well, guess what happened? They lost. Did they lose four in a row after that game? TJ Watt got hurt, but the offense didn't score.
Right.
Last year, after the San Francisco debacle, the defense again won them games, and they weren't supported by an offense at all until it finally fell apart. So I'm sorry if I don't get too excited over a smashing defensive performance to start the season, because all I'm looking at is no touchdowns, and where are they coming from the next few weeks? They better start to come soon.
Yeah, because you can't win like this. You play Kansas City or some of the elite offenses, you're going to be required to score points. But the defense, I'll say this, they knew, and it was a very good game plan, knowing that Kirk Cousins, and if you watch him deliver the football, you can tell he was favoring the Achilles surgery leg. And how could you not? He didn't play in the preseason. He hasn't thrown a football since last year before his injury. So he was tentative. They knew that. They knew they can pressure him using a defensive line and flooding the zone. He was confused. To see a 36-year-old veteran confused and make terrible throws, I thought, into traffic twice, three times he did it. There should have been an earlier interception.
Horrifying.
That bounced off of
yeah.
Dante Jackson's face mask. But the bottom line is they did a good job knowing what the opponent was and how limited they would be. Whenever you take Drake London out of the game, whenever you take Kyle Pitts minus his touchdown out of the game, whenever you stop Bijan Robinson under 70 yards rushing,
they were great.
It's a pretty good job.
And they were great against way better teams.
But you can't win like that every single week.
Yeah, they were great early in seasons against way better quarterbacks and teams than that one, and it somehow just didn't translate. Why? Because they couldn't score, because their offense never supported the defense. And then you have natural attrition, you have injury, you have depth issues. That's what happens over the course of a 17-game season. Man, if only the playoffs could start now. If only the Steelers could go into the playoffs with that defense.
But they all have to be healthy, too.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly what I'm saying. If they could go into the playoffs with the defense from early last season, San Francisco game aside, with the one that crushed Allen and Burrow, that defense could carry you through some playoff wins. But it doesn't work out that way over 4 months of attrition in the NFL. I'm getting, Bob, 200 votes so far in a Twitter poll. It's only been up for 10 minutes.
What was it? I didn't see.
Who should start if Russell Wilson is cleared for Denver?
I did the same thing from last night. Let me see what I... Tell me what you got. You're going to get a lot of responses.
My three choices were Wilson, Fields, or no way Mulsey made 9 threes.
I voted for Mulsey 9 threes.
And it's Wilson by a landslide. By a landslide. I think most people are viewing this clear-headedly, if that's a word. In simple terms, Fields did some nice things. It was a winning performance, but there's just no way he vaulted himself into the number one quarterback. He didn't win a job yesterday. They didn't score a touchdown.
Who's winning your poll?
Wilson by a landslide.
Okay, I have not so much a landslide. So I did this last night, 2,000 votes.
Now,
almost.
I don't know if no way Mulsey made 9 threes is skewing the vote, but go ahead, Bob.
Wilson, 59%, Fields, 41%. So I think the majority of people think Russell Wilson still needs to be the starting quarterback. Honestly, I want to see what he does. I want to see how he's capable of managing this team and how it would look different. If you looked at the pass charts yesterday for Justin Field, it was identical to Kenny Pickett. It was identical to Mitch Trubisky. It was identical to everyone except Rudolph. Rudolph had different pass charts because he went down the field a lot more. But everything was to the boundaries. All to the boundaries or checkdowns. You can't survive like
Bob,
that.
From a passing perspective, it was a Kenny Pickett game. It's not like Pickett never threw the ball down the field. I seem to remember a game-winning touchdown last year to George Pickens down the field against Baltimore. From a passing perspective, that was a Kenny Pickett game. Now, again, Fields adds a very important element with his legs of keeping plays alive. I'd rather have him than Pickett, don't get me wrong. But it was very similar, and the formula was similar. And here's the thing. For those of you who want to say, well, all that matters is winning. Mike Tomlin, do we have this clip from yesterday when he was asked about his offensive line and he delivered that we're 1-0 thing? Do you have that, Limitless Wonder?
They're 1-0, just like all of us. That's how I evaluate it. Football's our game. Our business is winning. We play today, and we play to win. We'll comb through it tomorrow. I have all that cute stuff for you on Tuesday.
Okay. The cute stuff. I don't know what that means. And Mike Tomlin himself, for the first time in his career last year, admitted that winning actually isn't enough. What he just basically said there was, we won the game. That's all that matters. We're 1-0. Winning is all that matters. No, he told us last year, the day they fired Matt Canada, and they were 6-4 at the time, winning ugly, crappy games like that. They were winning, on pace to make the playoffs at 6-4, but that wasn't good enough. And that was the first time Mike Tomlin admitted that when he went in front of the world after firing Matt Canada and said, we need to engineer victory more fluidly, and you get that by scoring points.
Right.
That's first time in Mike Tomlin's career he admitted what all of us were saying for a long time was, this is nice, 9-8. Yeah, you win, 10-7, whatever. But if you keep winning this way, it's not sustainable to any kind of success that you're aspiring to as the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's the first time last year that he admitted that just winning wasn't enough. They had a winning record, and he fired the offensive coordinator, or somebody did, and he said, we need to engineer victory more fluidly. So yesterday was great. Again, it's fine. Go in there, you win. Maybe the same recipe for Bo Nix. But man, you better start engineering victory more fluidly this season if you're going to get where you want to go.
I think that's a point well taken, but I think in the context of yesterday, it is their job to win football games, however ugly it may be, or however lack of pizzazz you saw in it. I get all that, but you're right. I mean, the pressure was building, but this wasn't just one game, and this is why this is different, I think. They got a new coordinator, and I think they're going to give it some time. Obviously, he has a different mindset. And I think basically yesterday was just do what he likes to do, which is run the football, play action pass, don't make mistakes. But over the course of Matt Canada's career, that was going on 3 years, Joe. At some point, the pressure was building to the point where they had to make a change too, and they knew it. And obviously, it had to do with lack of point production. In the 3 years Matt Canada was doing it, they were averaging less than 20 points all 3 years. You can't win in the NFL generally.
Right.
Now, when you face, who do they have coming up after this? You got the Chargers. I would bet that you're going to have to score a lot. I don't care, Justin Herbert, although yesterday was, city limits. One of the things that bothers me about the football, the way it is now, it's so sloppy in the first couple of weeks. Looking back, touchdowns are down every year for the past 5 years. You know what I'm saying?
I wonder why, Bob.
Because nobody plays anybody. This is like the actual preseason. You waste time. If you're the Steelers, you got to win these games. A lot of teams have to win these games. Cincinnati looked terrible. Why? Joe Burrow was out of sync. Totally out of sync, I thought, watching that game. He didn't play. Nobody plays. Kirk Cousins didn't play. I get it. He's got an injury. Now he looked terrible. He had no fluidity to his game. But anyway, that's a side note. I don't like how they do it, and you waste opportunities. One game at the end of the year could decide it. It could be back in September that you waste it because no one's ready to play. Anyway, yeah, they got to be more fluid. They have to score more points. I think he knows. Everyone knows that. But I don't think yesterday was a – you could say it looked the same as it did, and it did from last year. I think this was a different situation with a different quarterback. They're going to give it some time. They just didn't want to throw the game away with mistakes, and they almost did anyway.
And by the way, I'm willing to acknowledge that it could be worse with Russell Wilson. Like, Atlanta really didn't challenge with much of a pass rush yesterday. They were so concerned about Fields running. I asked Hokie about this during the game, that they were more in coverage mode, spy mode, right, on him. And so they didn't unleash the kind of exotic blitzes and things like that that could confuse an offensive line. Man, you're going to see some of that coming up. And Russell Wilson, because he's not the runner that Fields is, he's been a great runner, but I don't think anymore, could be in trouble. I'm willing to acknowledge that too. 412 928-9370. Make your case if you're a Justin Fields person out there for him. Or does Wilson deserve to play? You know he's going to be lobbying to play in this one. This is the Russell Wilson Bowl here.